Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy.
All right.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. I am joined this week by a man who's definitely my friend. And for anybody who's known me for the 10 years I've been doing comedy, this is a man who's known me longer than that. It is the former singer of one of the bands I used to play in when I was a drummer as my dishonorable profession. So by pure coincidence, we're now joined by BC, live from, funnily enough, BC, Brian Cranley, live from Canada. How's it going?
Not too bad, Darren. How are you?
I'm fine. You too, buddy. I've somehow managed to convince Brian that I'm going to have a wee beer because it's about 6:30 in the evening over here and it's breakfast time. But Brian, you having a breakfast beer?
Yeah, we'll have to have a breakfast drink together, right?
Fucking right. BC has gone full Canadian and is drinking at breakfast time. I love it.
Yeah. 10 o'clock on Saturday morning.
Great. I love it, man, because, I mean, like, you've been wearing Czech shirt for years, so Canada's just the perfect place to put you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, you can get them here as well. They're easier to find.
Yeah, I mean, you've been dressing like a lumberjack since you were 14, so why not go where the fashion is?
I've been doing it since I got my first Nirvana tape, yeah.
Very true. What I suppose, yeah, I mean, technically speaking, you're in the Pacific Northwest, right? Seattle's only a few hours down the road.
Yeah, it is, exactly, yeah, yeah. I've been down as far as Portland, but I've never made it to, what's the town called? Aberdeen?
Aberdeen, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a way out on the Olympic Peninsula, so I've never actually made that pilgrimage, but a couple of years ago, we drove down to see Kurt's house in Seattle. Have you been to Seattle, right?
No, I did. When I lived in Canada, I didn't get over the side you're on. The furthest east I got was Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario.
Okay, right. Well, that's something we'll have to organize then.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, now I know obviously it's good you're there. So, as always, I'm that pain in the arse, me too. When people say, you should come over and see me, I always show up.
Right, I know.
But tell us about where you are. I mean, are you Vancouver City or Victoria? Which one?
Yeah, we're in East Vancouver here, so it's kind of off the Commercial Drive kind of neighborhood, you know. So it's a really nice neighborhood. It's pretty artsy around here, so there's a lot of, well, before everything kind of closed up, you know, there's a lot of music venues and there's a lot of breweries around here. There's a lot of art stuff, like art studios and kind of warehouse space that people are putting to good use. So it's a pretty, you know, it's a great area. It's definitely my favorite area of the city, you know, so, and it's not too far for work or anything. So yeah, it's a great, great part of town, you know.
So does that mean you're doing loads of gigs then?
Well, to be honest with you, I actually have not played here in Vancouver for 6 or 7 years actually, but I mean, I've been playing other places from here. I've been kind of using it as a jumping off point, and I've done some recording here, and I'm working with another guy from Dublin actually at the minute here, and we're making a record. We're recording a lot, but we haven't actually really played out here in a little while. So I think the music scene here kind of tailed off a little bit towards 2013, 2014, you know. A lot of places, you know, with rents going up and stuff, a lot of little smaller venues closed. So that had a big effect on it, you know.
How long are you in Canada now? What year did you move out there?
I will be here 9 years in October. It was October 2011 when I came here.
Yeah, because you went there and then I moved to Australia for the first time in May 2012. So yeah, you were away just before me.
Yeah, yeah. So you were applying because we were still playing together in Belfast at that time, I think.
Yeah.
And I was sort of talking about it, and then I did the visa thing and went through. So and then I got another visa after that, and then I got my permanent residency after that. So it kind of, I mean, obviously I got married here as well, so that had an effect, right?
Well, I mean, I was going to say that when people say to me, oh, you know, how come you're back living at home? I was like, because I forgot to marry somebody in all the countries I went to.
But I don't think it actually helps. It doesn't help me with like citizenship or anything, you know. You're still independent that way, yeah.
Okay, but you're so you're in East Vancouver. 9 years, that's mental that you've been there that long. It definitely doesn't feel like that long that you've been there.
No, it really. I mean, I've been back quite a few times. I haven't actually seen you, you know, but like,
because I've never been here, that's why. I'm always somewhere else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because you were in you're in Asia, isn't that right? You're like you were in Toronto for a long time, right?
Yeah, I was in Toronto I did a summer all over Ontario, and I did a bit of the East Coast, and then I did a full summer, or like 6 or 7 months in Toronto, just in the city itself. Fucking great city, I loved it.
It's a great city, yeah. And you were gigging there, right? How did you find the crowds there? Or
they're actually very nice. Well, I mean, Canadians are polite by default, they were lovely, and they thought my accent was funny, and that was great. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I love gigging anywhere, so to gig somewhere new and somewhere a bit more exciting. But yeah, Toronto's like a massive city, very cosmopolitan. 2 million people in the middle of town. There's always something on. You can go to something 7 nights a week. It's class. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's a great city. It really is. Because my wife has got relatives there, so we were there. The last time we were there was like September 2018, and I did a gig there, and it was really good. You know what I mean? But I think to be honest with you, at home there's a great the audiences at home are some of the best I've ever experienced. Even compared to anywhere else, they're always a little bit tamer, kind of thing. You know, so it's getting used to that a little bit as well. You know.
So after being a bedroom guitarist and then being in a band with several people, including myself. You're a bedroom guitarist again, or you tour, so you don't gig where you're from, but anytime you go on your holiday, you end up doing a gig.
Yeah, that's kind of true. I tend to take the guitar with me and organize something wherever we're going, kind of thing, you know? So, I mean, if something comes up here, I do it. And you know, we do a lot of rehearsals, and we're like a rehearsal. We've got some rehearsal rooms near here that we go to a lot. And then of course, we're using like a Mac and Logic and stuff to record. And then if something comes up, you know, I put the guitar on the plane and fly somewhere and play it. I've been to, Montreal, Toronto, New Orleans, kind of any sort of a trip like that. And you just bring the guitar, organize ahead, and you can set up a wee show, you know? So it's very different from, you know, packing up all the gear into a van or whatever, you know, but everything's getting smaller, so you can still do it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, recording, you can do in the house now. When we were in a band together, we had to go to a recording studio. We spent a fantastic weekend actually down just outside. Was it Ballyshannon? No, where were we?
Near outside Bundoran, I guess.
I'd say Bundoran, yeah, that's what it was, sorry, in Donegal. But we were staying. Or sorry, the studio was just in the 3 miles of coastline that Leitrim has. But we were staying in Bundoran. And we went down, recorded an EP, and played a gig in the town. That was great fun. And then we managed to record an EP while being mostly drunk.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend, wasn't it?
It was great.
We had one night just in the house, then we started to record the next day, so that probably would have been you doing the drums first. Then we went and then we played a gig that night with that band, the Dead Flags.
Yes.
They were great. And then we went back in the recording studio for the next 2 days, and then went back home, and then we were back to work, whatever, on Monday.
Yeah, we very much our band was definitely the definition of the weekend rock stars. It was like,
yeah,
we'll do as much as we can and then go into work on Monday feeling a wee bit shit.
yeah, and we're packing them in, you know. Sometimes we were doing two on a weekend, or, you know, I think we did three on a weekend once. Do you remember we went and played in the Knock and Stocking Festival in Wicklow?
Yeah.
So I think we played Dublin Friday night, then we played Wicklow the following night, and then we played Laveries in Belfast on the Sunday night. Yeah, that was a busy one.
Yeah, that obviously feels like a tour, because Ireland's such a small country. And you're like, let's do three gigs in a weekend, but at the same point, there was a lot more music happening then. I mean, I was running shows and there was a lot more on. Probably I feel like maybe actually wanting to be in a band is maybe something less people want to do now. It's very much what you do when you're younger. Yeah. It's,
and with what you can do now, you can record stuff at home and distribute it you can distribute it digitally as well, so that the need to tour is kind of different. And it's very interesting here, because you know, in Ireland is so small, obviously, that you can drive around it, and you know if you wanted to do a gig in Galway on a Saturday from where we were, we could do it, or from Belfast or anything. But here, like, you know, in Vancouver, the border is notoriously difficult to cross. You know, you've got a lineup at the border, and they like to turn people in bands away. It's like, I've been in a lot of gigs here where they're like, we're going to do this without our drummer tonight because the drummer didn't get across the border or whatever. And then you've only got, you know, smaller, more remote towns. The next major Canadian city is Calgary, which is 600 or 700 miles away. So you can't, you know, you can't go to Calgary for the weekend and play a gig unless you fly. So you're generally concentrated in and around the Vancouver area, you know, so people don't tour the same way as they do at home here.
Yeah, you could be famous in one province and that's it.
Yeah, you can. I mean, people do it. You can tour, like a lot of people that I know that tour, they'll play a couple of gigs here, then they'll go to Victoria on Vancouver Island. And there's some smaller towns up like Campbell River and places like that, but they'll go up to and play. And there's a good music scene there, but you know, that the sort of like playing, you know, night after night, town after town is not quite the same here, you know, which is interesting.
I was thinking about this as well, of like famous Canadian bands and Canadian acts that I can think of. Who's really famous that's from Vancouver? Because I was like Rush.
Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Are they from Vancouver?
Yeah.
But you ain't seen nothing yet.
Japandroids, one of the guys from Japandroids is from here.
Okay.
Grimes is from here. I'm sure there's a load of other people.
Oh, Grimes is the lady married to Elon Musk that gives his baby the fucked up name.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my wife is saying Brian Adams is from here as well, obviously.
Brian Adams is not from Vancouver. Even though his nickname is the Groover from Vancouver, he's not. He's from Hamilton, Ontario.
He's from Hamilton, Ontario originally, is he? There you go. I did not know that. Because my Kim, my wife, is telling me that she used to live in West Vancouver, which is kind of actually more North Vancouver. But I think he had a house there for a while, and he like used to shop for vegetables or whatever. And she was like, yeah, like he would go into the shop that you'd get your fruit and veg in, you know?
Yeah, no, I obviously wasn't taking the piss out of Vancouver. I was just thinking in my brain of, you know, like accessible acts, because all the Canadian bands I know, I'm like, no, they're Toronto. Yeah. He's from Hamilton.
Yeah.
They're from Nova Scotia. I was like, who the hell's from Vancouver? But it's still massively known as a really artsy city. Lots of artists, lots of music, lots of...
But you know what's funny? Because I think a lot of that stuff, like anywhere, I guess, you know, rents are going up and the cost of doing a cost of living is just going up, and there's a lot of like you know, foreign investments where, you know, people are building, you know, big condo towers, and you know, the artists are getting squished more and more, kind of thing here, I think, you know.
Yeah, the condo towers thing you don't want, because they have that in Toronto and that kind of snuck up on people. Yeah. And they're hideous. Yeah. They're fucking awful looking.
Oh, they're horrible. But you know, I guess it's happening everywhere. Even, you know, in Dublin it's happening as well. You know, rents are going up, and you know, recording studios are getting squished. And
yeah, well, I mean, whenever I joined the band with you, you were living in Dublin. You guys had to drive up and down weekends to rehearse and stuff, or I would go down, get the train out of the bus down, and get picked up, and we'd go and do a gig in Dublin. So
that's right. Yeah,
doesn't really matter. Yeah. All that traveling used to seem like such a big deal, and now I wouldn't blink at the thought of doing 4 hours. But that's from living in Canada, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny that you and I are having a beer in the morning, because I recall meeting you and Restrever for a beer on a Sunday morning. I think it was, you know, you and I were sort of talking, you were talking about, you know, playing together basically. And we, I can't remember why we did it, but you came out to Restrever and we had a couple of pints on a Sunday morning in Restrever. And that's when we kind of decided, okay, let's try and, you know, get together and have a rehearsal or whatever.
I would well believe that. It was probably because I was a fan of the band. So your band existed before I joined. So I would have booked you. I mean, I would have had booked you guys to play at my venue, which was the INF in Warren Point, and had at That's the time right. was The Scream was the name of the band. And I try to remember what James Donnelly was the drummer, right?
Yeah. So like it started like kind of as schoolmates, I guess, where it was myself, David, and James, and another guy called Darren Fitzpatrick from Warren Point, who I think you know, right?
Yeah.
And he was an amazing guitar player and musician, and he had this great loft over his garage, and he had like a drum kit and an organ, and he had a Marshall 412, you know, he had all the gear, and he kind of took us, you know, under his wing, and we started to kind of play together, and like, you know, he could read music, and he was a great acoustic guitar player, and he could play all of, you know, the kind of like the Beatles songs. remember he had like a book of Beatles songs, and he could just, you know, like, you know, play through them, any Beatles song you could imagine. Beatles songs are pretty hard to play, right?
Yeah.
So it was the four of us, and then I think Dara kicked me out briefly, and then it became kind of me, David, and James, and that was right through till James moved to London in 2006, and then that's when you were on drums in after him.
When I got recruited, and then after that we recorded an EP, and we ended up with your brother in the band as well, Andrew, who's still playing in a brilliant band called Tetraneon. Really excited there. I'm actually very excited they're back in the studio. It's really nice to see people still playing.
They're still together, and they're gonna do a record in Belfast before the whole thing. I think they were booked in to Rocky O'Reilly's studio.
They were. I'm actually randomly bumped into them in the pub one time. I was like, what are you up to?
Did you right? So they've survived the whole thing, and they're still playing together, and I'm interested to see what the record will be like, you know. But it's funny because at that stage in the band, there was you were in Too Fat for Porn. Andrea was in Tetraneon, and the rest of us have been Scream. So we were kind of all coming from, it was everybody's second band at that point, I think, you know.
Yeah, it was nobody's first band. It was great fun, man. And also we had that real advantage, which I'm sure you miss now when you have to go travel to a rehearsal room in Vancouver, where we had our own practice space with a bar.
That's right.
How good was that? Like, if we would rehearse on a Saturday afternoon in the function room, which is where the gigs used to be in the Irish National Foresters in Warren Point. So I would set up the full PA system because I normally had a gig that night. I would bring the drums onto the floor. So when you were singing, you would have the full PA. So we didn't have to plug anything in, and you could listen to your guitar and listen to what you sounded like. So it was really good quality audio we were recording on. We were doing rough recordings, live recordings of us playing. And it was great. It was so easy. And then if it was like 2 or 3 in the afternoon and you wanted a wee pint, you can nip upstairs, have a break.
Yeah. The lads were watching the football upstairs, and we could get a tray of drinks and bring them down and play. That was
You would not get that service. If you wanted to be in a band now, it's like, I think I was playing in Belfast with a band after, was it after? It was maybe after the Scream, after I had left anyway. And I remember going to a rehearsal room and coming out half deaf. And I was like, that was horrible. I don't want to be in a band anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Because do you remember whenever we were rehearsing in Belfast, I think it was Cashier Number 9's rehearsal studio. Do you remember the guards that we would rehearse in? It was good. It was really good. Yeah. But it just wasn't the INF. It was just like so much smaller, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we had a full venue. We were just like, I used to do that really cool thing where we'd stand in a circle, which I thought really helped us as a band, because like everyone can see what everyone's doing.
Yeah, I totally.
Yeah, normally when you're in a band, as a drummer, have spent my life looking at people's arses.
It's kind of unnatural almost, isn't it? You know, because eye contact is very important, and kind of the nods and the eye contact. You know, a lot of people, I guess some people are just so rehearsed that, you know, or whatever way they work, it's a different thing. But, you know, we always, whenever we were playing, definitely need to kind of keep the eye contact thing going on.
It was brilliant as well, especially playing with, David Cranley, who's your cousin, who was the bass player in the band. It was class playing with David because he was so tight, and he would just look at me and we would lock in. And then after that, it was, I mean, you could go and do whatever you wanted over the top of what we were doing, as long as everything we were doing was just so solid. Rock. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it really was. It was that was really where it kind of came together, when the drums and the bass that just locked together. And you know, like, I mean, you guys had a really good, like, it was sort of stamina as well. It was more kind of like, you know, we never sort of got tired as we went on. At that point, we were kind of used to playing. And, you know, we were able to pick up pace and keep that going right the way through the whole thing, you know.
Yes.
Really good, yeah. I wish we had more recordings of the actual, you know, some of the shows.
Actually, that's a good point. I think I have a couple of the CDs in the house. Is that music available anywhere? Are you on, is it on Spotify? Is it online anywhere? Is it Bandcamp?
I don't actually know. I think I have some of the original CDs, but I... They're in Ireland, and I haven't been back, so I haven't got them. And I've got some on my iPod here, my old 10-year-old iPod. So, I can get them off that somehow, I think. But, should get them, should rejuvenate them, you know.
I love that you still have your iPod. So good.
Yeah, it doesn't. You have to keep it plugged in and kind of, you know. But it's 10 years old and it's still working, you know.
Actually, I had an iPod that I got in 2006 when I worked for HMV. I remember having it, and then I sold it whenever I found out how much it was worth. They became like a collector's edition thing. I think I got the same amount of money that I either paid for it or more. I think when I bought it, it was like 140 quid. I think I sold it for like 175.
Well, it's, yeah, people, yeah, yeah. I think another one that was...
But I had it for years, like fucking years.
Yeah, and it was still working, right? It wasn't just like a collector's... collector's...
Nope. Still working. Yeah, it's so weird. Isn't it so weird in music trends where it feels like we're going back in time. We're regressing. Vinyl's back.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know if you can see my, I've got a long way of vinyl collection behind me there, but I've collected now, you know, here. What happened, I got here, there was a record store nearby, and I don't think there was really so much of a, there was one record store in Belfast. I remember there was a couple of them in Belfast, but here I saw Led Zeppelin House of the Holy for $8 on vinyl, and I was like, well, I don't have a record player, but I'll buy it anyway, and just, you know, so I brought it, took it home, and a couple of weeks later I saw something else that I'd like, and so I started to kind of build up, you know, 5, 6, 7 records, and then, you know, eventually I got a small record player, and you know, then just kind of went from there. So I love listening to stuff on vinyl, always have.
You know? Okay, one of the things that we should probably tell people listening as well, a bit of background about you as a guitar player. So you said band Led Zeppelin. Would you say Zeppelin are your favorite band? Or Zeppelin the best? Or the one most listened to, at least?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, they were definitely a big... I'd say I was probably the most fascinated with them, for sure. You know, always been a huge Zeppelin fan.
Right, yeah. Two fun facts about Brian Cranley. Brian Cranley, I don't know if you still have it, but you did have a double-necked... Gibson, didn't you?
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I've got the Epiphone one. Yeah, yeah, I've got that. Yeah.
You still have it?
Still have it, yeah, yeah. It's at home, yeah. It's
very Jimmy Page, How the West Was Won, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, I think I bought it more simply because of that, rather than ever really intended to use it, you know, for the band, whatever. I think I did use it on one track, you know, but...
Is it a 6-string guitar and then a 12-string up the top?
Yeah, it's, yeah. If you play it right-handed, it is. But because I'm left-handed,
that was my other fact I wanted to give about you, because you don't play guitar like normal people play guitar.
No, I wish you did. But yeah, because of that, when you play the double neck, the top neck is shorter than the bottom one, and it just looks completely wrong. It looks weird, you know.
Yeah. But the thing of it is, as well, you don't. You haven't got a left-handed guitar, and are you? What was it you had? You had a right-handed guitar turned over, but you didn't restring it, so you're playing all your chords upside down.
Yeah, everything's upside down. Yeah.
So did you have to teach yourself separately when you looked at like a chord book? Did you have to spin it and go, "Oh, that's where my hand goes"?
Yeah, you know, I never even looked at chord books or you know, that kind of stuff. I just picked it up kind of my own way and did it from ear, basically. But the reason I did that was I played it upside down is because my dad had a guitar in the house, an acoustic guitar that I kind of learned off, and it was a right-handed guitar. And because I was right-handed, I used my right hand for the chords and forming all the kind of difficult stuff on the neck, because that felt more natural than using your left hand, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I did it, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think you'd be very happy to know that with the whole lockdown thing, when people are saying, "Oh, you'll be coming out of this with a new skill or something," I have totally regressed into my teenage self.
Really?
Yeah, I have a drum kit. I have a drum kit again.
Yeah, you were saying, yeah.
That's so great. I have an electric kit, which actually, funny enough, I sold the electric kit I had in the house. I sold it yesterday. I put it up and an hour later it was gone because I'm upgrading. I'm getting a better one. So I sold the one I had. And I've been playing away again. My hair's growing, not on purpose again, but this is pretty much the haircut I had when you knew me. When I was younger.
Yeah, it looks good. There. You man, you age today, like, you know.
I know. We've got a few more lines on the face from being out in the sun. And of course, still wearing my band t-shirts, so.
Oh, nice. DC, lovely.
Vintage AC/DC t-shirt, thank you very much. Which I got for like $10 in Australia. It was great.
Wow, well, okay, right. So it's an Australian AC/DC t-shirt. That's the real thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So are you going to be playing again, or are you going to...
At the minute, no. I've been really enjoying, just because the electronic kits have a little port on an auxiliary. You just plug in your laptop and you could play along with songs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get that nice being able to play along with a band as well. But just getting back into my own kind of fundamentals of stuff, you have to like relearn your chops, especially for drums. Mm-hmm. I'm getting tired now. I don't know how that ever happened. My hands will be tired after they haven't calloused. It's like playing guitar. You have to harden up again. This bit of skin from the hi-hats has to harden up again. So it kind of hurts. So I've been playing along with a lot of stuff with like fast hi-hat beats to try and build it up again.
Yeah.
Which thankfully my favorite music in the world is punk music. So there's plenty of that.
Plenty of it, yeah. But it's funny because I was thinking about, you know, whenever you started to do the comedy stuff, right? And you know, that's a really great way to be able to travel and play together, you know, because you obviously you don't need any. I mean, do you take any equipment with you whenever you do like
notebook? You're doing
just a notebook, right? Yeah. Whereas, you know, if you're playing music, right, or a drum kit or anything like that, it's much harder to move stuff like that around, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. Funny enough, I ended up doing comedy, and I've told this story before. I think I ended up doing stand up because I needed a creative outlet and I was just burnt out playing a band.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I get into that thing where I was saying I always wish I had learned to play guitar, because with my work ethic, I think I could have got signed. I didn't have to be good.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's that thing. It's like, you know, all the background stuff in a band where you're, you know, organizing when you're going to pick people up and drop them off and you know, well, or all the gear that you need, and then, you know, getting everybody organized for rehearsals. And I mean, that's all great fun, but you know, after doing it for a long time, it starts to, you know, doesn't it? It's definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I was tour manager. So if I called a rehearsal for 3 o'clock, I would be there at 2. I have to open up and set up so that we're not wasting band time when everyone else arrives. So someone has to do it. So I became drummer, sound engineer, manager. And then I was like, I'm fucking bored doing this. But it's like anything in even in comedy, I'm really not arsed with all of the background stuff that comedy entails. But I run two nights, which I really enjoy, because I enjoy putting the show on and I love performing. Same as when I was in a band. I loved playing live on stage with other musicians. But all the other stuff I was not arsed with.
Yeah. And I mean, like, one of the things, like, I mean, you were always someone who was very comfortable on a stage, and, you know, like, you always enjoyed being on a stage. That was, you know, visible about you, kind of thing, you know. I think as I started to get a bit older, I actually started to enjoy being in front of people less and less as well, you know. And, you know, I can still muster up the... But there was a point where we were playing, and you know, and I was really enjoying just kind of playing on a stage, you know. And I think as I've got a bit older now, I guess I'm kind of gone off that idea, you know.
Do you prefer the creative process of you and the guitar, or the recording and you can change the song? You prefer that process as opposed to here it is?
Yeah, I think I like that, you know. But I think, you know, playing live is kind of necessary too, you know. So if I get an opportunity to do it, I force myself to do it, because, you know, there's no way that you can rehearse fully. Rehearsal never brings out. It's not as much fun, I suppose, you know. Playing live is just a real thrill, you know.
I always say rehearsal is a lot like sound check. When you go and sound check a band, nobody's hitting as hard as they hit. Do you know what I mean?
No.
When you get sound checked and you're like, that sounds all right, and then you start and a bit of emotion comes into your playing. Like, you used to have an orange tiny Terra. Do you still have an amp?
I've got it here at downstairs.
Oh, yes, unreal. So Brian's amp basically reacted to how you played. If you give it a good smack on the strings, there was more gain on the note. You could actually control the kind of tone and the power in the guitar of how you played.
That was
so cool. And I was like, but we would sound check and we'd be like tipping along, and then we'd start playing and they'd be like, and turning everything down on us.
That's right. Yeah, I suppose I actually didn't think about that.
Yeah, because your amp actually reacted. I remember doing sound and, you know, mixing for practice and going, that doesn't sound right. Because when we would play, it would be real power. And you used to plug into that little 4x12 I had in the INF, which was great. This little amp was tiny, but it was so good.
It was great. It really was. And, you know, I think you can sort of set the amp so you've got a lot of overhead on it, and then you just back off the volume on the guitar kind of thing, you know. But that amp just crunches up really, really nicely whenever you kind of kind of crank it, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it also suits the sort of style of music you do as well, because it allows for a lot of control of, like, the emotion of the song. This is the quiet.
Yeah.
Here's the chorus.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of, like, you know, you can, but it's very touch sensitive, I guess, you know? And it's a great thing because it's so portable, you know? And you can plug it into different sizes of cabs, and it's a great amp. I've got a couple more amps here. They're a Canadian make, and they are similar, but they're a bit bigger, you know. They're kind of a, you know, a lunchbox sized head, but I've got kind of two, and you can chain them together, so you can really get a lot of volume from those as well. Yeah.
I always had this weird fascination, like, I love the technical aspects of guitar, but I can't play guitar for shit, but I love the sounds they make. I was a guitar tech, for fuck's sake, so I can fix it for you. I can string it, I can tune it. I can't play fuck all of it. I know a couple of chords enough to be like, yeah, that sounds good, you know. But that's the chords. That's the chords I will use to go, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So you did guitar tech for So I Watched You From Afar.
No, Fighting With Wire.
Fighting With Wire, right? Yeah.
Great. Who band. Actually? There, Cahir is now in New Pagans. You heard them?
Yeah, I have. Yeah,
With Alan McGreevy. Yeah, fucking serious band, and it's great to see a band from here still producing really good music. Craig McKean was the drummer from them. He also lives in Canada. Craig lives in, I think he's Calgary, and he started his own drum company. He's making snare drums now, and they sound so good. Yeah.
Well, what's the name of the company?
Ava Drums. AVA. Yeah. I think his wee girl's called Ava. So AVA is the name of the
I must check that out. That's fantastic. Yeah.
The class, I already said to him, I was like, dude, I might buy a drum kit so I can buy a snare off you, just so I can say, I know the guy that built this, and the sound is phenomenal. Right. Craig was a serious drummer, so he knows what he's looking for, you know what I mean? But he's a carpenter by trade.
So it's a perfect combination, right?
Oh yeah, serious stuff that he's making, and he's based over there too. There's actually a lot of musicians that we would, so there's yourself, Craig, and another big guy, Ross McTiernan. Ross is from Middletown in Armagh. He played in Gas Can Ruckus. He lives in Winnipeg. Gas Can Ruckus.
He lives in Winnipeg, right? Yeah, because I follow Gas Can Ruckus, and I saw that one of them, because they were going to do like a final show or whatever, and then before, I guess, one of them moved away, you know. It's a very common story, I think, you know. But they were a great band too. They were a phenomenal band.
But you should check, because Ross is doing, like, over in Winnipeg, I think he does like an Irish duo basically with him and another dude, and then he's in a class punk band as well, but he's playing guitar now. He's not playing drums anymore.
Right, he's playing guitar. That's
you know, cool. you know every time, like, when we were growing up, you always knew those multi-talented pricks that could play everything.
I could do everything.
And you're like, I can't form a C chord. Fuck yourself.
Yeah, and you know, I've tried, you know, like, I've gone around and sat behind the drum kit, and it's just absolutely, you know, Greek to me. It's just, I can't understand how anybody can do it. I can't even really tap my foot in time, which is a weird thing, but I can, you know, to be able to physically do all that stuff with your hands and feet is just completely beyond me, you know.
Yeah, I love that as well, where you see those, like, sort of solo acts, as you would do, where it would be you playing the guitar, you see those guys and they've got like the little tap pedal for like a beat, and I remember just thinking, or something Brian Crowley won't use.
yeah I could probably use that as a bit of a reminder, you know. Yeah.
But what are you using at the minute? Let's be a bit of a nerd, because you, at the time when I was playing in the band, your guitars were, I think you had like an old scrapper guitar you fixed up, was it? Did you have like an old Strat?
Yeah, it's an old Strat, yeah.
You still have that?
That's still my number one guitar. I've never played a better guitar than that one. That's still my main guitar. Yeah.
Is that like your first electric?
Yeah, it is. In school, like, we did a thing with Dara Fitzpatrick and a guy called Ross Annett called the Hendrix Trio, and that was in April 96, and we got together and we were going to do this sort of school concert where we were all wearing like the green school jumpers and played at the sort of variety night, and Ross had a Sunburst Strat, and I thought it was a beautiful guitar, and I said to him, would you sell it to me? And he said, how much? I said, £150 or something, and he said, I'll think about it. And I was all ready to buy it. And he came back into school the next day and said he didn't want to sell it to me. So my dad then said, okay, let's see if we can, you know, find another guitar kind of thing. So it was obviously like pre-internet. So we got out the Yellow Pages, looked up the guitar shops in Belfast and rang them and said, do you have something like this guitar? And we went to Session Music, which was on Donegal Pass, gone now, I think. But I got a couple of guitars in there, but this guitar was there, and I immediately knew that it was just, the neck on it is so, it's very wide but very thin. So that's the guitar I've been playing for 24 years now, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. That's nice, man. I think that's real nice for you. Just like, this is the thing I had, because I had a couple of kits. Although the last kit that I sold, which had, I still have the Scream bass drum.
Yeah, really,
I said that's in my mum's with some stickers on it.
That eventually.
I know. Yeah, that's part of the old history. Well, we changed the name of the band before we. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't even called the Scream anymore. I had the cover, but I'm trying to think what other stuff was recorded then, because you had done. Had you done two EPs before I joined, or one? Back to the Stars, or was that the first one?
We did Back to the Stars first. That was 2005, and then we did Recollection Day 2006, and then we did the one we did Fade to Memory Part One, which was with you in February 2008. Then, and then we did another one with you in 2009, and then we did one more just before I left for Canada, which was called Over Western Isles, which we did in the same house that we stayed in Donegal.
Yeah.
But we did that one with we brought drums, but we didn't, it's got sort of percussive effects on it, but like that, but it's got no actual drums. But so we, in that one, when we all kind of switched our instruments and tried to play a bit more of everything, you know, so, you know, you stop being the guitar player or the bass player or the drummer, and just tried to kind of, you know, I think we really did that because, you know, I knew that I was going to be moving away, and it was the last opportunity to do it. And we checked the house. The house was free for a weekend in May, so we just zipped up and did it, you know. But I'm glad we did, because, you know, we haven't done another one since. So
I take it as a great honor as well that I was never replaced. Thanks very much.
Yes, you were never replaced. No, that's true. And, you know, I mean, I think it didn't make sense, because, you know, I think you were getting ready to do some traveling yourself, and I was saving for traveling, and we didn't want to go into a recording studio because we were all just saving for other things, you know, so it didn't make any sense, you know. But I mean, you've been there. I mean, you were there in spirit for sure, you know.
No, it was good fun, man. And by spirit, you mean whiskey, because I used to drink quite a bit of that when we were playing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it never showed, but yeah.
That's true. Well, thank fuck. Well, here with show now, I definitely can't drink as much as I could, and I shudder to think what drinking and playing at the same time would look like. But yeah. But before I let you go and explain to your wife why you're having a beer for breakfast, have you been doing any recording lately, or when can we expect something from you? Or obviously lockdown's kind of screwed everybody's plans, but.
Well, I did another solo record in, I've got a kind of like a solo project called Lo Camarasca, which I did a recording in October 2017, and that's on Spotify. And then we're working on this Sacred Ape stuff. And I think there's one Sacred Ape demo on YouTube, which is just a demo basically, because the other guy who we're doing it with called Ian Scanlon, he's from Dublin as well. And it's his project basically, you know, and I'm kind of contributing whatever I can to it, but it's his sort of musical vision. And, you know, he's introduced me to a lot of stuff that I would never have been into sort of when I was, you know, playing in the band with you or anything. It's more like Stone Roses and, you know, Brian Jones Time Massacre kind of stuff. It's, you know, and I've been slowly kind of getting into that kind of stuff myself and really enjoying it, you know.
Yeah, ours was a lot more kind of Americana, wasn't it? It was Tom Petty, Ryan Adams, Wilco, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I guess it was a more kind of American sound, you know. But Ian has been feeding me a lot of like Primal Scream and that kind of stuff, and I've been kind of
fully endorse that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, that's cool, man. I'm actually very glad to hear that you're still playing, still creating, and it's nice to catch up.
Yeah.
And you're still doing that, because I always really enjoyed playing with you, and you always were good for a new composition or a new idea. And I think it was nice playing the band with you, because at the time it just worked really well. You know what I mean? It was that nice thing of something to do on a Saturday afternoon. We'll hang out and play music for 3 hours and have a pint.
Oh man, like I don't regret any of it. Do you know what I mean? The whole thing was a great experience, and you know, I think probably it's just kind of that thing where you're in a different phase. You go into a different phase for a few years, and you know, I mean, you're still obviously playing, and you know, you've got the comedy stuff as well, which is great, you know. And you know, who knows what'll happen in the future, you know? I mean,
people are doing gigs via Zoom these days, so let me figure out how to plug the drum kit into the laptop.
That's right.
I'll give you a solid beat. I'll just count to four and follow me, okay?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's good. Well, here, look, what I'm going to do then is whenever I post up this podcast, anything you want me to show the people, you can send me a link to it and I'll put it with the podcast. How about that?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that'd be great.
Happy days. What, obviously now you're saying that you've been listening to loads of new music. Give me a couple of recommendations of stuff that we can tell people to listen to while they're up here. So what's been going on?
I've been listening to a bit of sort of traditional Irish stuff at the minute. And there's a couple of good bands and singer-songwriters that are, one of them is a girl called Bridget May Parr, and she's from Galway. She's definitely worth checking out. And then there's a band that I've been listening to called Lankum, Lankum, and they've got an amazing record called The Live Long Day. Listen to that.
Okay.
I've been listening to a bit of a band called Ye Vagabonds as well. And I've been listening to them off the back of a documentary that I saw on YouTube by this guy called Miles O'Reilly, who's an Irish filmmaker. And if you get a chance to check out his stuff, it's absolutely fantastic, beautifully shot. And, there's a series called This Ain't No Disco, and it covers like a lot of like what's happening right now in the music scene in Ireland. And it's fascinating, you know, it's beautifully shot. You know?
Nice. Okay. I always like new recommendations of stuff to watch, because one of the things I've been really catching up on was when I moved to the new house, we got Amazon Prime. So there's loads of music documentaries on there.
Yeah.
So I watched a brilliant documentary recently about, the name of the band is completely escaping here. Now, I was going to say Glassjaw, but it's not Glassjaw. But I've just been watching loads of documentaries. I watched a great one called Hired Gun.
Right.
Which is about all the guys who play in bands with great acts. There was a guy who played drums for 30 years with Billy Joel. There's a brilliant guitar player called Jason Hook. He played with Alice Cooper. But before he got the gig with Alice Cooper, he was playing guitar for Hilary Duff.
Really? Right.
Yeah, God. So he played on all these Disney tours, but he was like a rocker and a metaler. He now plays guitar in Five Finger Death Punch, who are a full-on metal band.
Yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah.
So
there was another guy.
Was so good.
Do you remember a band at home called Turn?
Yes.
There was a band called Turn, and I think the bass player in Turn was a guy called Gavin Fox. And
I know the name.
I think Idlewild must have changed their bass player, but Gavin Fox got the Idlewild bass player slot in 2002 or 2003. Around the remote part time, I think, and then they ended up getting an opportunity to tour the States opening for Pearl Jam. So he kind of went from you know our level of like, you know, playing with Turn or whatever, right up to playing like these sort of arenas in the US, you know, and North America very quickly. You know, must have been quite a shock to suddenly be doing that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, and that's a nice story with that. The documentary that I watched was about the band Jawbreaker. That was in my head, yeah. A band who I like, so I don't know why I suddenly forgot their fucking name when I was trying to tell it to you. But it's pretty much a documentary about a band who are doing quite well, and then when they sign for a major label, it goes all fuck up.
Oh, really? So it's the opposite, right?
It's the opposite, basically, because it was after Green Day released Dookie, and these record labels were going. It was like after Nirvana, when they went to the Pacific Northwest and just signed everybody. They went looking for punk bands after Green Day. Got these guys who had been doing quite well and touring away, and then they got put in with a new producer who kind of cleaned them up, which meant that their existing fans hated it, and their major label debut only sold 40,000 copies.
Wow!
And it's actually a very good album. I liked it, but it's nearly hard to find. It went out of print after like its first.
I must check it, see if I can find. Where could you find it? Or
it's on Amazon Prime. Whenever I get off here with you, I'll give it a wee Google and I'll find it for you. But it was just, I love those stories. And one of the things me and you spend a lot of time talking about was stories about bands. Like, bands on tour and the mad shit they did. And I think that was one of the things me and you really connected on, was not even playing music, just silly shit that happens when you're in a band.
Yeah, I agree completely. Like, you know, yeah. I think there's great stories out there.
You know? Well, we used to talk about stuff, and I was a bit of a geek in the stuff where when I liked an album, I'd go back off and find out about it. Stuff like Deep Purple recording an album in the hallways of a hotel in Switzerland.
That's right. Yeah,
I mean, like,
in Montreux. Yeah, in Montreux,
and the Rolling Stones recording albums in a wine cellar in France. You know, that kind of shit. Like, you're just like,
yeah. Yeah,
I loved all that, and so we kind of thought that was our little thing when we went over to Donegal. We were like, we're just in the middle of nowhere in the west of Ireland, having barbecues and recording an EP. It felt really nice.
It really was. It was a lovely spot to be, like, musically to play, you know. And it was a very sort of creative place to be, wasn't it? You know,
it was cool. Like, the recording studio we were in was pretty much an old tool shed. It was still had the old original white brick wall. It was class. I really liked that.
Yeah,
but and that.
So you know, Al. The guy Alan, who was the producer, he's playing with what's her name, Miranda. She's like a black blues singer in Ireland at the minute, and she's played the One Point Blues Festival quite a few times.
Yes,
Miranda. I can't remember her name's escaped me now, but
I've seen her a few times. She's very, very good.
Yeah, he's playing guitar with her now. Yeah,
that's great. He's a superb guitar player, and he actually put Lap Steel on one of our EPs as well. Remember that?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was a great lap steel player. Yeah,
yeah, but he, that was really cool. Just kind of going to his house, and he was like, "Yeah, I do gigs," and that's just how he made his living. That was really cool.
Yeah, and that was quite a long time before, you know, the way, you know, music was as you know decentralized as it is now, because he was able to, you know, make a living doing that in the wilds of Donegal. You know,
yeah,
well, I wouldn't mind doing myself.
That was one of the things that happened here, obviously, with the old the lockdown thing. Blues in the Bay was cancelled, so it was supposed to be, was it this weekend, last weekend?
I think it was supposed to be this weekend, actually, yeah.
I'm actually supposed to be over in England right now at Slam Dunk Festival, which I went to last year, which is a pug festival they have. On Saturday, it's in Leeds, and on Sunday, it's near Reading somewhere. I always go to Leeds because it's on a Saturday, and it's at Temple Newsome, where they used to have the original Leeds Festival. So it's class.
Really, right?
It's a brilliant venue. We went last year and saw Bad Religion, NoFX, just all these old classic bands, like all the stuff I listened to when I was 16. These bands are still playing. Lagwagon, it was so good. Just a full day.
I love that. Do you remember we played like that gig in Laveries in Belfast, and it was like a Bad Religion, like they just put out a record or something, and like it was good. Because I remember like I got a Bad Religion badge from that gig. Obviously they weren't playing it, but it was in some way connected to Bad Religion.
Okay, was it New Maps of Hell? I think that was the album came out. I still have my Bad Religion t-shirt, which I bought in Canada. And I got, I found a brilliant place in Toronto that did band t-shirts for like, just printed band t-shirts for like a tenner, $10, sorry. Yeah. So I got a Black Flag t-shirt as well.
A printed Black Flag, lovely. Printed, I got a couple of ones as well here. Yeah. Just like printed, yeah.
I've got my Ramones t-shirt, and the Black Flag one is pretty much a hand giving the finger, and it just says "My Rules" underneath it. And I was like, I like this.
Okay, yeah.
My mom's not as keen on it, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, kind of like, what is it that you're wearing on your t-shirt? You know, yeah, my mom's the same, yeah, for sure. Because Andrew actually got me a Black Flag, just the classic Black Flag with the four black bars on it kind of thing, you know, which I can't wash because it's a white t-shirt, but, you know, I don't want to wash off the Black Flag label off it, so...
Turn it inside out and wash it on its own first time.
Okay, I'll do that then.
Top. I've had many a band t-shirt. I know how to keep these bad boys. So
keep them in good shape. Yeah.
Oh man, no, that's okay. BC, I'm gonna let you go there, but thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's been nice catching up, and it's been hopefully people listening have enjoyed the silly stories about the stupid shit we used to do.
We'll do some again sometime, huh?
Hopefully so. Well, I mean, you're out in Vancouver, so you're a long way from Restrevor in County Down, where you're from. So that was one of the other things in the band. Three members from Restrevor and me. It was like the Osmonds if they just hired a guy.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, if I had known that it was going to be the Osmonds and me, we could have played Crazy Horses. That's a fucking banger of a song.
That's a banger. Yeah, you missed that one.
We didn't have the organ player, though, so we wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah, we could have got one.
Okay, right. We've got some musical recommendations off you. We know what you've been up to. I'm going to stick up a link for what you've been up to or your recorded output. Do me a favor, though, because now this is pressure because it's going to be recorded that I've said this. go and try and find some of the stuff, or grab your brother to try and go get stuff, and we'll get that shit uploaded so people can listen.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'll do that for sure.
Because I think I have some of them saved maybe on my iTunes, but I went to play along with one recently and I can't play a drum part now that I wrote.
Really? Yeah. I think I can't sing notes that I used to be able to hit kind of thing, you know, but yeah. I think I do have a lot of that master stuff, original stuff kind of at home, and I'll see if I can get my hands on it, you know, because I was supposed to go home in April. So I was literally supposed to go home right before all this kind of coronavirus stuff happened. And so my flight got cancelled and I was planning to kind of go back through a lot of that stuff and get my hands back on it again. So I will do that eventually.
Sweet. There you go. That's now public pressure, because from my dozens of listeners. Brilliant. But one of the things I should probably ask you, because you're the whole way in Vancouver, how's the kind of Canadian response been? Has everyone been polite and do what they're told?
Like to the music kind of thing?
No, not the music, to the whole being locked in the house thing. Are people
all right? The whole lot. Yeah, no, everybody's been really super responsible here, and you know, have been doing the social distancing thing. And like, I think for us, it happened around the 12th of March. So there was kind of it wasn't a really strict lockdown, but we've been kind of just sitting tight in the neighborhood here, and we've only been going out for necessary stuff. And some of the restrictions are easing. Some of the like tattoo parlors and hair salons and things are opening this week. But I don't think there's any bars or restaurants open here yet, you know. But people have been, I think, pretty responsible and, you know, keeping their distance on the street and in the park. And so, yeah, it's been, I think people have been sensible, yeah.
God, I mean, honestly, oh, Canada, I love those people. That's really good.
Yeah.
Do something. Okay. It's like challenge.
I know. It's a great place to be, I'm telling you.
You tell them to do something, they do it, and then apologize for not doing it as well as they thought you thought they needed them to do it.
Yeah.
Right. I will let you go and have another breakfast beer. I don't know if you noticed as well while we're doing that, I'd opened the second one. Had a wee sneaky.
Well, I'm having one so that we're having, it feels like we're, you know, together. It's a virtual bar kind of thing, you know?
I love it. I enjoy this. I might do this from now on with people. Or this is going to be a good excuse, because I had my mate on, who's a comedian from Australia, last week. So she was, I was talking to her, I think it was late at night for me and early the next morning for her, because she's ahead of me.
Yeah, I was listening to it. Shan,
yeah.
Shan, right, yeah.
So what I might do from now on is, I have a mate in New Zealand I want to talk to. That's 12 hours ahead. If I could tackle him to get him on at nighttime, I could probably have a beer for breakfast. You're a genius.
You should do it. I recommend it.
Thank you. You're a good man. Well, on the opposite as well, you're locked in the house, so it's not like you have to drive anywhere. So enjoy your beer while you have it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then on. Brian Cranley, BC, live from BC. Thank you very much for coming on Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends.
Thank you very much for having me, Darren, and good to talk to you.
No problem, buddy. I will see you soon. Take care. So long. Good night. God bless, and safe home.
Bye.